Welcome to KUOW. My name is Bill Radke. It says so on my birth certificate. It's part of my personal identity. My next guest had no birth certificate, and when it comes to her identity, well, she got a do-over. Tara Westover's new memoir is about her path from a radical version of the Mormon faith to a very different identity. The memoir is called Educated. Tara, welcome to KUOW.
Thanks for having me.
You call your father a charismatic radical. What was that belief system?
So I was raised the youngest of seven children on a really beautiful mountain in Idaho. And when I say my dad is a charismatic radical, it's because of these beliefs that he had. So he was opposed to a lot of the institutions that most people take for granted. Doctors and hospitals was one of them. So we were never allowed to go to the doctor, not when we were ill and not when we were injured. And we were injured a lot because my dad had a junkyard. He also...
Some people might think of that as, religious fundamentalists. They don't want to go to the doctor, but it's not quite that simple.
Sometimes it was religion. Sometimes it seemed justified more by kind of paranoia and conspiracy theories. So later in life, I was never allowed to go to school. That was another thing that my dad was opposed to. So he was opposed to anything to do with the school and the government. So I didn't have a birth certificate. But I didn't really have a concept of mental illness when I was growing up. But I came to believe later in my life that he probably had something like bipolar, something like that, that I think explains his kind of radical views. A lot of people do want to say that it's about religion because sometimes he did justify it in religious terms. But to me, I've always felt that the whatever was going on with him mentally, I've always thought that that probably caused the fanaticism and not the other way around.
You go out of your way to say that right at the top
I
of
do,
your book. This is not about Mormonism or religion.
It doesn't seem fair to say that it's about Mormonism. I grew up in a Mormon town. Everybody else in my town went to school. Everybody else had birth certificates. Everybody else went to the doctor. To say that this is a representation of a Mormon family, to me, seems oversimplistic and actually just factually wrong.
So what was the basis for his distrust of school and doctor?
I think that there were moments it was kind of conspiracy theory. Oh, you'll get brainwashed. Or he sometimes talked about the Illuminati, the New World Order. It had these kind of really extreme political paranoid elements. And then sometimes it was justified in terms of religion where he would say, well, God wants us to be at home. God wants us to be homeschooled. To stay home, be homeschoolers, and that people who send their kids to school or people who go to the doctor are committing some kind of spiritual offense. And that, so it was sometimes justified in religious terms. But I just think of my dad, he was extreme about everything in his life. And so, of course, he was also extreme about religion. But I don't necessarily think that the religion caused the extremism.
And in case people are assuming, your parents were probably polygamists. It wasn't that. Yeah. But it was dangerous. You describe how you and your father didn't get important medical care.
Yeah, no one in my family. So my dad developed this theory that doctors were part of this conspiracy, that they were actually trying to kill you, and that if you took pharmaceuticals, that the spirit of God would leave you. And so he had these, he really believed it as a thing. I think people want to hear some of the stories that are in the book about, there's a time my brother lit his leg on fire and he was covered in third-degree burns. And we treated that at home. My mother made a salve out of lobelia and comfrey and we treated it at home. And a lot of people, I think, want to hear that story and think that he was just being callous, that he didn't care about us. But, he really sincerely held his beliefs. And he really believed that taking my brother to the doctor, that that would do him real harm, that he might even die, that the doctors might do something that would really injure him. So as weird as it sounds, I think for my dad, that was love for him. Not taking him to the doctor was love. And a few years later, when he suffered his own much worse burn, he was standing next to a car and the car exploded in the junkyard. He was burned terribly.
He worked in a metal scrapyard.
And he was burned horribly. And he made the same decision with regards to himself, which is to say they treated it at home. And he nearly died. And I think, so for people to say, he was just callous, he didn't care about you. No, they were sincerely held beliefs. He didn't withhold medical care from us and then give it to himself. He really believed what he was saying.
He treated your tonsillitis by having you stand outside with your mouth open.
He did. He had this idea that the sun was the most powerful healing agent that we had. And so there was a month in, December and January in Idaho that he was telling me to treat my tonsillitis. I just need to go stand outside every day and open my mouth and let the sun shine on it, which I did do. And it gave me a heck of a jawache.
He used to tell you that nothing will happen that God doesn't want to happen, which to me sounds like a version of everything happens for a reason, which people say all the time. What did that mean to you?
I think it was a way that he would, when we were working in the junkyard, he wasn't big on safety. And I think he really believed that God wouldn't allow anything bad to happen to us. And so when something bad did happen, he would then interpret it and say, well, there was something good that came of that. There was a lesson we needed to learn, but that won't happen again because now we have, you know, we've learned that lesson. It was the same thing with his burn. You know, he was burned terribly because his car exploded. The reason the car exploded is he didn't drain the fuel from the tank before he started to remove it with a cutting torch. So a spark from the torch made it into the tank and the car exploded. And afterwards, he would interpret that as God needing to, you know, he got some kind of spiritual enlightenment from this burn that he had suffered, this terrible burn. And, you know, the idea that the car exploded because gas is flammable, that's not how he interpreted that event.
Mm-hmm.
So he just had this really extreme way of living. And of course, when I was a child, because I wasn't allowed to go to school, because we didn't interact that much with the community, my dad's ideas were completely my ideas. I mean, I didn't have my own ideas about history, about the government, about doctors. Every word that he said, I believed. And it wasn't until I got older that I began to have access to different perspectives, different ways of thinking, and began to kind of construct my own ideas about the world.
Do you think all families are cults in a certain sense?
I think every family culture is so strong that, you know, I think what I went through in terms of the isolation and only having my father's perspective is an extreme version, I think, of what everybody goes through, which is to say we're all born in families and that culture seems very normal to us. And in my case, it seemed normal, even though I would grow up and learn that it wasn't. But it seemed completely normal. And I do think everyone goes through some version of that. I do think for everyone, a family is a cult in one sense. Your family is a cult in some sense or other.
Do you recommend that everyone let go of their family, at least temporarily?
No, I think it's a complicated question. I think part of what it means to grow up is learning how to define yourself, both in connection to and in counter-distinction to your parents. I think, you know, the end of the story for me, I would end up being disowned by my family because I would confront them about a violent brother that I had, and they would decide that I was lying. And my father, because he is so extreme, would begin to tell people that I was possessed. So my story would end in this dramatic way, but I wouldn't say everyone has to have that, you know. I mean, I would have done anything I could to keep my relationship with my family together, except for do what they were asking me to do, which is essentially deny my own memories and my own ideas about the past and about the present. But I think that's such a personal decision, and the relationship that people work out with their families and their identity and how you allow yourself to change and yet try to hold on to relationships that you had that came out of an earlier version of yourself. I mean, that's the negotiation. That's something everyone has to decide for themselves. And if I could have chosen a different ending for myself, I absolutely would have.
What ending would you have chosen?
I wish there'd been a way that I could have grown up and changed and become a kind of person who saw my brother's violence for what it was. And I wish I could have found a way to be that person and still belong to my family.
This is Tara Westover, author of the memoir Educated. And you mentioned your violent brother. And that was a real significant event in your break with your family. And that partly, the violent power that he held over you had to do with gender relations in a way. And of course, we associate the Mormon faith with an extreme and troubling gender relation. Can you talk about any connection between all of that for you?
I suppose there was some. I think any time you have a religion that is obsessed with modesty, that is obsessed with chastity, I think that can really quickly or very easily turn into a family culture that kind of blames women for sexuality. But I don't think it's necessarily that way for a lot of Mormons. I think kind of like a lot of things in my family, that was taken to an extreme. And I certainly don't think it's in the Mormon religion. You know, what happened with my family when I confronted my parents about my brother's violence, and they decided that I was lying, that they were going to tell people I was possessed, they were going to take these really dramatic steps to silence me. That's not in the Mormon religion. That's not religion. That happens everywhere. I mean, all the stories that are coming out right now about people who knew about various abusers and then that these institutions covered up for them, you know, I don't think that you can't really blame a religion for that or even a particular family for that. I think human beings, it's very difficult to confront difficult things. It's much easier to kind of look the other way.
That might surprise some listeners or readers who want to make that connection between the Mormon religion and the patriarchy.
I think people want to do that because you never want to think that you're capable of making that decision. And it's much easier to say, well, I'm not religious, so I would never enable an abuser in that way. But I kind of think, you know, the much harder thing is to be honest with yourself and to think it's actually incredibly difficult to believe someone when they come forward and say something negative about someone you know. And, you know, I think what's hard for people to remember is your experience of a person might be different than someone else's experience of a person. And, you know, there was that famous case where someone who wrote for Lena Dunham was accused of sexual assault. And she immediately said, there's no way that this is, that he's done this. You know, this is a misreported case. And I don't mean to attack her because she apologized. And I think she realized the mistake she'd made. And I don't know whether he was guilty or not guilty. But my point is, her experience of him was as, she knows how he treats his boss, you know? So naturally, yeah, it was hard for her to imagine him.
That's behaving. Her point of view.
Yeah, her experience of him had been different. And it's entirely possible that someone in his life over whom he had a lot more power, that he would be different. But for all of us, I think it's very different. It's very difficult to imagine someone being different than our experience of them. And it's so much easier to just look away or justify or allow the status quo to maintain itself. And when we hear stories like this, I think it's easy to think, well, that's the Olympic committee, or that's this religion, or that's something to do with the institution. But I don't know. I tend to think it's just something in all of us where it's hard to look at difficult situations and take them seriously. I think it was incredibly hard for my parents, and they made the decision that they made, I think, because of how hard it was.
You and I were talking a little about this before our microphones went on, that I find that a theme when I listen to you speak, when I read your book, that you have this, an open-mindedness, an empathy, but I feel it could collide with some people who want to draw a hard line against people who don't believe the accuser or, you know, child abusers, which in a sense your dad was.
I think my dad, I've speculated, I don't have a medical degree, I think he was mentally ill. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I don't see a lot of point in just raging against the decisions that he made, but I still think the behavior was unacceptable. And I think as humans, as people, we have to be able to hold complicated ideas in our mind. We have to be able to recognize that people can be abusive without meaning to. And, you know, there can be real love in these relationships. You know, I love my parents. There's one thing I've never doubted is that my parents love me. And what's hard to understand is how my parents could love me and tell people I'm possessed in order to silence me about my brother. These are the complicated things. These are the things that make, for one thing, it's part of what makes these relationships so hard to walk away from, is that the love is real and it's not a trick. And so it's really easy to stay in some of these relationships or give way to them in ways that are really damaging to you because, for one thing, I think we're always so programmed to think that loyalty to family is always the right thing, because loyalty to family is an objectively good thing. But there are times when loyalty to your family can come in real conflict with loyalty to yourself. And the reasons why it's so hard to choose yourself, to take care of yourself in those situations, that those tend to be the gray area. It tends to be the fact that there is real love there, often people who are abusive are also really good people in other situations, you know? I don't know of anyone who has an abusive relationship that it's bad 90% of the time. It's probably good 90% of the time. And the problem is that 10% or that 5% or maybe even that 1%. So I don't see any benefit in writing a story that is completely black and white, because I think everybody lives in the gray area.
Tara Westover's story, her memoir is called Education. Dr. Tara Westover, a Cambridge PhD in history. The book is called Education, and listeners might think that the education is the hero of the book. Education brings us out of bondage and ignorance, but you don't seem very impressed with the way we are using education.
Well, I'll correct you very slightly.
Okay.
The title is Educated.
Educated.
It's very similar.
Sorry about that.
I chose that word because it's a loaded word. I think for a lot of people, the word educated has come to mean institutionalized, and it's become associated with privilege and power. And you think, oh, if you say, oh, he's educated or she's educated, you often mean like 10 universities that we consider to be the real universities. And I think that this idea of education that we have come to confuse education with the institutions of education. You know, a school is not an education. A school is the place that we go to try to achieve an education. It's an instrument of education, but it's not an education itself. An education is the individual's pursuit of knowledge, and it's all the ways that you are changed when you pursue knowledge, when you really take seriously other points of view than the ones that you were given at birth by your family, by other people around you. And so I wanted to write a story that was about education, not as a way of getting degrees and certificates, although I did get some of those along the way, but mostly as a way of making a person. And, you know, my education, the effect of it, education in this broad sense, so the people that you meet and the books that you read and the ideas that you encounter, they really changed me. I mean, I grew up in a family where I was very normalized to the violence in my family, and I don't think I ever would have questioned it. I certainly would never have taken steps to address it. And it really was because of all the ways I changed after I left home and read and thought and met different people. I became a person for whom violence was intolerable, and I had to confront it. And that would be the reason things with my family would play out the way that they did. So I wanted to tell this story about education that was a much broader idea of what it is than just certificates and degrees. And it's not so much about making a living, it's about making a person. And I think the fact that we've allowed the word educated to become almost synonymous with institutionalized or synonymous with privilege is really an unfortunate thing when you think about what education should be.
It sounds like the way some people talk about the institution of religion. What do you, in our remaining minute or so, what do you want us, you said at the top the book's not about religion and you called it educated. What do you want us to come away with about what a real education should be?
I think a real education is when a person tries to get access to as many different perspectives and ideas as they can and tries to use those ideas to participate in the creation of their own mind. I think education is as close as any of us get to self-creation. And we can only do that in a limited way, but in as much as we can do it, it's through education and not through the institution, because the institutions are always going to be rooted in ideology. They're human institutions. So I think we just need to think about education as a much bigger thing, as the individual's pursuit of knowledge, and not necessarily as where they do that or how they do that or what the name of which school is on their degree.
Dr. Tara Westover came to her education in a remarkable way. As we've said, the memoir is called Educated. She didn't wait until late in her life to write it, but in her 20s, and it's a powerful read. And thank you for writing it, telling your story, and coming in, Tara.
Thanks for having me.